too.
Talking about it today so you can talk about it tomorrow. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back. Joining us now is Professor Thomas Bellotti of Eastern Connecticut State University. We are proud to include as one of our sponsors. Professor Balsersky is a scholar of early American history. He's written a book, actually, about the relationship between James Buchanan and his vice president, William Rufus King, which was the presidency immediately before Lincoln took office. Most people don't realize that. And the parallels that are being at what was in our country in 1860 to 61 and now here 2020 to 2021 are happening all over the media. Professor Balsersky is going to come and join us now and give us some true historical context and perspective. Welcome, Professor, to the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Lisa.
Thank you so much. So, Professor Balsersky, first for you is explain to us, with your knowledge of prior inaugurations, how and in what way is this inauguration as a ceremony different than those in the past, particularly in the recent past of the last 100 years or so?
Yeah, this ceremony, as we watch it on TV today, in many ways is going to be unique. The National Mall is closed to people, and instead, as we look at the screen, we'll have flags planted in honor of the victims of this COVID-19 pandemic. There will be lots of mask wearing and social distancing on the west front of the Capitol. And perhaps most significantly, someone will be missing from that stage. And that's the outgoing president, Donald Trump. Instead, former presidents Clinton, Bush, and Obama will be there as President-elect Biden takes the oath of office. But indeed, it marks a really sad moment to know that we did not have a peaceful transfer of power, although we will have a successful transfer to Joe Biden.
Well, let's put it this way. We hope it's peaceful, but it's not gracious. It's not an acknowledgement, if you will, legitimacy of the coming into office. So, think as a historian, as a scholar, why do you think it's so important that outgoing president the inauguration of the incoming president?
Yeah, and this takes us back to really some of the earliest transitions of power in this country. We often look to the transition between President John Adams and the incoming President Thomas Jefferson in 1801, when Adams made the decision not to attend his successor's inauguration. And in fact, over the next 75 years, when there was a transition between a different political party, the outgoing president didn't attend. So that actually ended up including John Adams and his son, John Quincy Adams, in 1829. Similarly, people don't often remember this, but in fact, Martin Van Buren did not attend also the inauguration of his successor, William Henry Harrison. And then most famously, and the one that we look to as the most recent example of a outgoing president snubbing his successor or boycotting would be Andrew Johnson. So it wouldn't be until Grover Cleveland, some of these great names here from American history, that he actually, as a president from a different party, he lost as an incumbent, that he actually attended his successor's inauguration. And that's been our tradition. It's been our tradition to show this symbolic transfer, to show amicability, to show that America is unique as a democracy in that we don't have to worry about tanks on the street or soldiers on the street. And it really, that had been our tradition. When I say it hasn't been peaceful, I'm talking, of course, about the tragic events of January 6th, the insurrectionary mob that stormed the Capitol.
Yeah. So, So when is judged by historians like yourself, how much will it be as you assess his presidency that he does not attend the inauguration? Or is it something that grows in significance with the passing of time?
That's a good question, Lisa, because ultimately this day is Joe Biden's day. It's not Donald Trump's. And as with each passing minute, as Trump is in literally in air right now into a disgraced retirement, and as a new president will have the spotlight put on him, Legacy is all Donald Trump will have, and he will be undoubtedly trying to shape that legacy through appearances on media, ultimately his presidential library, and whatever political future he has. Past presidents, former presidents, are judged first by history in an immediate poll that C-SPAN puts out. And actually, the C-SPAN poll isn't just a subjective poll. It takes into effect 9 different categories. We'll see where President Trump ranks there. But the consensus right now among historians, among people who study the past and who have been able over these last 4 years to think about Trump in a historical context, is that he will not rank well. It's unclear where he will fall. Some say he's the worst president. Some say he's in the bottom quartile of failed presidents. Others, perhaps looking at it, say he'll actually be somewhere in the middle of the pack initially. We don't know just yet. But indeed, when we look at some of the former presidents who have been considered failures, and this is really my own research area with President James Buchanan, the one before Lincoln, there's so much in common. There's so much that we see as a failed presidency in the Buchanan years that echoes what we've endured really here in the last 4 years under President Trump.
Tell me what you mean. What are some of the analogies?
Well, the main thing about President Buchanan, one of the main reasons he is held to account as our worst president, is his failure of leadership during a crisis. Now, that crisis was the secession of seven southern states from the Union over the winter of 1860 to 1861, but more generally over a crisis of sectionalism between North and South, between those who wanted to stop the spread of slavery and those who wanted to see it continued, over the fate of 4 million African Americans who were held in bondage for a period of 200 plus years in this country. Whereas by comparison, we've seen a failure in leadership here from President Trump over the coronavirus pandemic, and more to the point, a failure to see a successful transition or really to facilitate a successful transition to the incoming administration. Really, he's been absent these last several weeks and has focused on trying to delegitimate the election. By comparison, Buchanan at least legitimated the election. He saw to it that President Lincoln was installed, and indeed was installed without issue. So I think it's that. It's the leadership issue. It's the way in which he has managed a crisis that I believe is why Buchanan and Trump are being put in the same breath today.
Chatting with Professor Thomas Balcerski of Eastern Connecticut State University, who is an American historian and an authority and has studied in depth the differences in which different presidential administrations have handed the baton, if you will, off to another. I saw Professor, and I opened the show today with this is my own feeling, that I saw that in Greenwich and in Stamford and in Fairfield, locally here in Fairfield County, superintendents had decided that the mere exhibition of the showing of the ritual of our inauguration might be too much for tender eyes and ears for K through 8th graders. What happened on January 6th, it is verboten in the classroom to actually put the TV on. I disagree with it, by the way, profoundly. And I was interested in your thoughts on that.
Now, Lisa, that makes two of us. And I think we make a greater risk in not showing our children this important moment, this important transition in our democracy. Their parents, of course, will be watching, and it'll be all the talk at the dinner table tonight. It really does a disservice to all Americans to try to tell them what they can and can't watch, first of all. You want to talk about a First Amendment, right? There it is. Now, I understand that different schools have different reasoning for not wanting to show this inauguration. And as an educator myself, I understand there's a time and a place. But let me say this. This is the time and the place to put the spotlight on a peaceful transfer of power in this moment. What we have made every precaution. I mean, I don't know what else could be done to protect the Congress and the incoming president. So I have actually really very few concerns about that. I think, if anything, I'm concerned about this reaction. I'm concerned about this idea that somehow this is a tragedy unfolding. It's absolutely the opposite. This is a day for optimism. And I think that's a very valuable lesson to tell our future generations, that this is when we look for renewal in our country.
Yeah, particularly because Joe, as the incoming president, is asking. He's asking for unity. He's asking for a calm, a peace, a serenity, and yet a determination to face the realities. I mean, he's being handed. Tell me, you're the historian. Where would you rank sort of the condition of the country that is being handed over to Joe Biden in terms of how it ranks with other presidents at the start of their presidency? He's being handed an awful lot.
Yeah, he certainly is. I think Joe Biden's facing the most difficult transition of any president since Abraham Lincoln on the eve of the Civil War. I think one difference between then and now is that war is not imminent. It's not. It's not, in fact, something that we see as happening. Made a problem of our own making, and that is disinformation and, dare I say, too, the inability of people to be able to get along with their neighbor. This kind of polarized political climate that has been so promoted over social media by President Trump, thankfully now has come to an end. Have a
Professor
megaphone
Thomas,
in which to shout.
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, but I don't know if it's me or you that are cutting out, Professor. Professor, you're cutting out a little bit. Okay, can you repeat your last thought, please? Go ahead.
Yeah, just sorry about that. Basically, I was saying that Biden is facing the most difficult situation since any president, Abraham Lincoln, and indeed we are a nation divided today. So I totally agree with the sentiment that he is going to unite us, and that is going to be his mission. In many ways, unlike Lincoln, however, he doesn't face the imminent threat of civil war. Instead, it's going to be actually a somewhat harder challenge. Instead of fighting a war, it's going to be about unifying a country, about battling misinformation, and ultimately battling the forces of racism that still impel too many Americans to action.
And you see the two very much entwined. You see this, do you? Because that's what I'm hearing from you. Do you see the movement that supported Trump in its most extreme measures as an intertwined issue of racism as well? Do you think it's all part and parcel of the same thing right now?
It's really hard to see the images of a man holding the Confederate flag in the sacred space of the U.S. Capitol and not to immediately make those connections, not to immediately go back to the cause that animated those Confederates in the 1861 moment when they left the country, when they seceded, when they saw no possible route in the Union. For those Americans who stormed the Capitol, for those Americans who believe that that this election was stolen, there's that similar sense that this is a nation that cannot exist. The difference is we don't have the same fault lines along North and South. Instead, it's all around our great nation. So it's even harder to root out this misinformation and this polarization. And yeah, I think it's still a challenge. It's going to be a struggle. And I as we face a pandemic at the same time, for a president to do all these things at once, this is why I say, really, Biden faces a challenge unlike almost any other.
Thank you very much, Professor Thomas Pisarski of Eastern Connecticut State University. We really appreciate you coming on the show today, and we will definitely have you back for teaching us something today.
No, thanks for having me, Lisa.
It's a pleasure. We'll be back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.